This week on Developer Weekly.
All those parts of .NET we have optimized crazily in the .NET Core / .NET 5 space. I think on Linux, I think we did 30% improvement in HP clients.
Now, before we start this episode, I want to ask you for a favor. Could you please go to ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly and rate this podcast and leave a review? This helps me to spread the word about the podcast and helps other people to find it. That is ratethispodcast.com/developerweekly. Thank you so much. Welcome to another episode of Developer Weekly. This week, I'm talking with Scott Hunter about .NET 5. Scott is responsible for Microsoft's .NET platform, which includes the .NET Framework, .NET Core, ASP.NET, Entity Framework, .NET Tools, Web Tools, and the managed languages, C#, F#, and VB.NET. So everything, basically. It's great to have you on the show, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing great. We just did a conference last week. We have .NET Conf, which is our annual conference in the .NET space, and we just did we also do some smaller ones that are just like one day events, and we just did one last week on microservices, and it was exciting to talk about all the cool stuff that we've been doing, you know, in .NET Core and now in .NET 5 in the microservice space.
Yeah, because you guys do so much cool stuff, and I love .NET. Because I've just built my whole career on it. If it didn't exist, if .NET wouldn't exist, then I wouldn't have had a career that I had. And I think many other people feel the same. So we're basically working on the shoulders of giants. And those guys are you guys, the giants that make all this awesome stuff. So why do you actually do what you do? Why do you work in technology and in .NET specifically?
So my history is very interesting, actually. I started off in Turbo Pascal. That was when I started learning how to program. I learned in Turbo Pascal, which, interesting enough, Turbo Pascal, for people that don't know, was written by Anders Hausberg, who was the author of C# and much of what we call .NET today. And then as I was in a work environment, I learned C++. And did C++ for many years. And then I had just done a little bit of Java. In that time frame, we had the company I worked for, it was called Mustang Software. It was a startup. And we sold that startup in 2001. And once we sold that startup, I wanted to take my top engineers and give them a reward for the 10 years we had done in that startup. And so we flew down to Orlando, Florida, and went to the Microsoft. Well, the intent was to go to Disney World, but Microsoft PDC, that's the Professional Developer Conference, what we used to call what is now Build, was there that year. And I took my team to the PDC. And that was when Scott Guthrie was on stage introducing ASP.NET. You know, we were technically selling a startup, and we're here at this conference, and we see ASP.NET, and the next thing you know, we're all in the hotel shoving floppy disks into the side of the laptop so we can get a beta copy of ASP.NET. I think it was called ASP Plus at the time, running on the computer. And it was that conference, which I never even planned to attend, that kind of got me into .NET, and I never looked back after that. You asked why I'm in the technology space. I'm in the technology space because I love the fact that my job changes every year. Technology is always moving in new directions. You know, when I first started working in .NET, we were doing ASP.NET web forms, and then APIs came out, and then containers happened, and Linux happened. Microservices, there's always a new thing. And to me, I love the challenge of, you know, trying to make the .NET platform be great for the world and developers as new technologies come out and change. And so I just love the fact that the space is always changing. My job is different every year, and it makes it never get boring. And, you know, when it comes to .NET, there's no more joy than working on a product that's used by millions and millions of customers. And many of them are very passionate about using the technology. To get the honor to go speak at a Build conference and sit in a room with a few thousand people is just mind blowing to me. and so that's what gets me excited. And taking .NET to the next level. That's really the most of us in the team are always trying to go figure out, you know, what can we do to make .NET faster, better, more cross platform, more whatever, to make sure it's always a tech at the bleeding edge.
Yeah, and you're definitely doing that because I've been using it since the beginning. And if you see where we are now from where we've been and with all the things in between, it's just, it's been an amazing journey. And there's lots more to come.
Yes, tons more to come. You know, we're just a few months away from shipping .NET 5. And then we'll start working on .NET 6. Actually, we're starting to plan .NET 6 right now.
Wow, that's amazing. So let's talk about that .NET 5. And to start with, let's just get some definitions out there because I think that's going to help people to frame this a little bit. So to me, there are platforms like Windows and Linux, and then there are different runtimes like .NET Framework, .NET Core, and Mono, and there are others as well that can run on those platforms. And then these runtimes contain frameworks with libraries like the base class library, and ASP.NET and Xamarin and other workloads as well. Is that the right way to think about this stuff?
That's a perfect way to think of it. We think of it the same way. There's platforms, which you said, those are the operating systems that we run on. And then there's the runtime, which is the technology that can run a framework. And then there's the frameworks we put on top of the runtime. .NET's a little unique there. Java and .NET are probably the only two runtimes that come with a bunch of frameworks built into them. You know, and yeah. In most cases, if you look at technologies like Node or Go, those are just runtimes. They don't really have a framework around them. And that's one of the unique attributes of .NET is the fact that we give you a framework and a runtime both.
Yeah, it's all packaged together, which is nice because we can then just use it out of the box. So we currently have .NET Framework, .NET Core, and Xamarin as the main things. There are others as well. And then now .NET 5 is coming. That's a new thing. Is that something that comes to stand next to those runtimes, or is it going to replace all those things? How is that going to work?
You kind of mentioned a problem. the fact that we have multiples of these things is a challenge in itself. It's hard to explain. If you're a customer, do I use .NET Framework? Do I use .NET Core? I think the Mono one kind of hides away because if you're building a Xamarin app, you just end up using Mono and not really having to think about it, except when it's not compatible with some existing .NET code. And so the intent with .NET 5 is to basically, there's a term we use inside of Microsoft, we call it one.NET. And that is, can we get back to a point where there really aren't lots of these things? So we've been going down a journey where, technically what we're going to call .NET 5 would originally have been called .NET Core 4. And you can imagine the confusion of, do I use .NET Framework 4.8 or do you use .NET Core 4? that seems like a confusing way of describing things. And so we chose to rebrand the product from .NET Core to .NET 5 because we wanted to show that's the future. .NET 5, 5 is bigger than 4. So it should be very clear to a customer that if you want to use the newest thing, it is .NET 5. And so that's and this is part of this one .NET journey as well, which is the intent is to, hopefully be able to point, as I said, all the customers in the .NET 5 wave and not really, .NET Framework 4.8 will always be there. It'll be supported as long as Windows ships. We still work on it and we still patch it and it's still a safe place for our customers to be. I would tell a customer today, if you have an existing app that runs great on .NET Framework 4.8, leave it there. If you want to build a brand new app using our newest tech, you want to use .NET Core 3.1 LTS or use .NET 5 this year. But the naming and versioning is all meant to kind of show that everything's coalescing back together into a single product called .NET 5. I do want to call out a concern that sometimes people raise, which is as we built Core, we kind of said, you know, Core is meant to be smaller than .NET Framework. And some people think that when you say, oh, you're going to put Xamarin into .NET 5 or .NET 6, it'll actually be in .NET 6. When you put all these things back in, are you going to turn .NET back into this huge monolithic framework? And the answer is no. That is not, you know, if you build an ASP.NET Core application, none of the WinForms or WPF DLLs have to be on the computer or have to be in your application at all. So we built all this stuff to be very modular. We do that in some ways. There's the notion of what you put in the top of your CS project file kind of tells us whether it's a desktop or it's a web, and you only get the stuff that you actually need. So the idea is we put the product back together into a single product again, but you still only have to pay for what you use. You don't have to bring the whole thing. And we have new tech that we're still saying it's not production ready. It's a linker. And that's some technology you can use to basically build. .NET Core lets you build a single exe, where you can take your entire application and put it into one file that contains .NET Core and your application. Today, that ends up being probably a 70 meg or 80 meg application. With the linker technology, you can actually link out the parts of .NET Framework you're not using or .NET Core you're not using, and we can shrink those things down. So we're going to give you lots of dials. First off, if you're building a web app, it doesn't contain any of the desktop bits. And then secondly, you can use a linker. And build, I showed, I could build a microservice in ASP.NET Core and get it under 20 megs. And so my point here is, even though we're going back to a big product, or a single product, it isn't a big product. And, you know, unlike .NET Framework, it is truly side by side, meaning you can always use the newest one and not worry about breaking something. So,
Right. So, and that linker technology that's available right now?
It is available right now. There's a blog series that's going to go up probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So if you look at the .NET blog, I would say in September, we'll have a blog post on how to start using all this technology.
Awesome. So .NET 5 then will replace .NET Core in this line of .NET Framework, .NET Core, and Xamarin. And then I heard you say that .NET 6, which is then the next version, would then also encapsulate Xamarin so that we only have .NET Framework and .NET 6 next to each other, right?
That's correct.
Right. So then what would be the choice that customers would make between using either .NET Framework or .NET 6? Like you said, you point people to .NET 6 if they want to, or .NET 5, .NET Core for that matter, if they want to make more modern things. What are actually the advantages of using that over .NET Framework? You mentioned side-by-side, for instance. Can you talk a little bit about what that actually is?
Yeah, I can. There's a couple of benefits. You know, first off, side-by-side is what you mentioned. And to explain that, on a Windows machine today, there really only can be one version of .NET Framework. And right now, if you install the latest version of Windows 10, that would bring down .NET Framework 4.8. Now, the challenge of having one .NET Framework on the machine is, you know, I think everybody's aware, you know, as your Windows gets patched every month, as you upgrade to a new version of Windows, you want all the apps that you already have to continue working. And so there's a huge compatibility burden. And so years ago, it was about 2013, the end of 2013, early 2014. We in the ASP.NET team were working on the next version of ASP.NET. Yeah. And we had this grand plan to really clean up ASP.NET. But the problem is that to clean anything up means I'm going to change the APIs a little bit. Changing the API breaks compatibility because .NET Framework is installed globally, one copy only on all the machines in the world. that means I would break all ASP.NET applications by making those types of changes. And so we kind of realized we kind of had to get out of the .NET framework to solve this problem. And what is what we call .NET Core today, which will become .NET 5 and 6, really was taking the lessons we had learned in that first 12 years or so of .NET framework and making sure we didn't repeat them the second time. And so side-by-side was a big part of that. .NET Core and .NET 5 and .NET 6, you can install as many of them on the machine as you want. And the intent there is, with .NET framework, I remember having big customers call me, Scott, we have a machine that has 30 ASP.NET applications. If we upgrade the machine to 4, at the time I'd been .NET 4, .NET 4, can you guarantee all those apps are going to still run? I'm like, no, I can't. and so what's the solution? Well, the solution is to make another server and put .NET framework 4 on that one and then copy apps one at a time as you know they work. With .NET 4, you can have version 1, 2, and 3 all on the same machine. If you're a developer and you want to use the newest features of .NET 5, start using those .NET 5 features and you have no risk that you're going to break any of the existing applications because they'll continue to use the older versions. And that side by side is letting us give this promise that you won't break anything. You know, another feature when you're choosing between .NET Framework and .NET Core would be cross-platform. One of the things that we saw once again back in 2013-14 was we saw this, Linux becoming popular. And plenty of people want to run some of their server workloads, especially on Linux. And we kind of recognized that if we didn't, make .NET work on other platforms, it was gonna hold us back. And so if you want compatibility with Mac, Windows, and Linux, .NET Core /.NET 5 is the only platform that we build that supports those. And we go even beyond that. We support different architectures of chips as well. So we support, obviously the Intel 32-bit and 64-bits, but we also support the ARM chips at both 32-bit and 64-bits as well. So that gets us into IoT devices. And so if you want to run on all those platforms, that's a benefit of Core /5. And another benefit that we have, and once again, this benefit is because that we were able to change some of the APIs. Performance is a huge thing that we made a push for in the .NET Core /.NET 5 space, meaning that because I can now change APIs that I couldn't change in .NET Framework because I would break the world. We can change some of those APIs. And so we've gone and all throughout .NET, whether it's regex is in .NET 5, whether it's HTTP client, it could be your server, which we ship a new server in the .NET Core /.NET 5 world called Kestrel. All of those sockets, all those parts of .NET, we have optimized crazily in the .NET Core /.NET 5 space. I think on Linux, I think we did 30% improvement in HTTP client.
Wow.
As an example. And so it's very likely that if you take an existing .NET framework application and do the work to port it to .NET Core /5, you might see huge performance improvements. Inside of Microsoft, we have plenty of teams that are using it for that exact reason. Porting services like Azure Cosmos DB or Exchange Server, they're porting them to Core, and they're doing that because they want to get to be able to run those services cheaper with less memory, less CPU, and so those are some of the primary reasons.
Yeah.
For moving to Core, I do want to highlight one more thing. As you're making that decision, .NET Framework versus .NET Core, when we built .NET Core, one of the intents was to focus primarily on if you're going to build a brand new app today. Let's say I'm gonna put us in the .NET Core 3 world, and say you're gonna build a brand new app in 2020. what technologies would you use? And in many cases, there's pieces of .NET framework that are not in .NET Core. And I'll list them off. ASP.NET Web Forms is not in the product. WCF, Windows Communication Foundation, is not in .NET Core. Windows Workflow is not in .NET Core. Those are all awesome technologies, and they're amazing. But in almost every case, the way you would build an app today is slightly different than it was then. If you're building a modern web app today, it's probably going to be a SPA, single page application that kind of feels like a desktop app. Most of the apps that we use on the web are SPAs. And so, .NET Core has ASP.NET Blazor, which would be the replacement for web forms. Windows Communication Foundation. It was amazing. It was built on top of a protocol called SOAP, which was designed for interoperability, had great tooling. But what you find today is most developers are building apps that use REST. And there's a new upcoming technology called gRPC, which gives you more of a contract. REST is very open. The payload can change, and the app should be able to automatically change to it. The gRPC is more, here's the parameters and they're enforced and you must call them this way. But you see gRPC and REST end up being replacements for WCF. Workflow, most of the stuff that you do in workflow is now replaced by cloud tech that does the same thing. And so as we built .NET Core, we could have tried to bring every old framework that we ever built, but we really focused on the technologies, if you were going to build a brand new app from scratch today, that we thought would be there. And that's why there's a couple missing components. And so if you have applications that use web forms or WCF or Windows Workflow, you might want to keep those in .NET Framework. We did make sure that .NET Core has an amazing WCF client. So you can write a brand new web app in .NET Core that can easily call back to one of your .NET Framework WCF servers. But I think those are the mix of things that kind of make you make a decision of what tech.
Oh, all right, that's great. So you talked a bit about the workloads that you can run on .NET 5, .NET Core, .NET 6, so ASP.NET, Blazor, APIs, that type of thing. What about Windows Forms and WPF? Where can we run those?
Yeah, that was Windows Forms and WPF. That's many of us think about the web and think the web is taking the world over. And the reality is we still have millions of customers building WinForm and WPF applications today. It's a great way of building a desktop application that runs on top of Windows. And so that's why those felt like modern, important workloads for .NET Core. With .NET Core 3.0 and 3.1, we brought those workloads to the platform. We've had amazing uptick on them, faster than we expected. We thought that people would spend some time before they moved to it. But they're both there. They're very popular. I said millions of developers use those every day. They're still growing. And we also open sourced both of those technologies along the way. In fact, .NET 5 will be the first version of .NET that has public features that have been added by the community. So there's actually new features in WinForms for .NET 5 that came from the community, which I'm super excited about.
Wow, yeah. And Windows Forms and WPF, their UIs are kind of tied to Windows, right? So can you also run those on other platforms like Linux and Mac?
You cannot. It's funny. That's one of the most common requests that we get is, hey, I want my WinForm application to run on a Mac. Or I want my WPF app to run on a Mac. And there's a couple reasons why we would not do that. First off, WinForms. If you don't know, WinForms is actually a small wrapper around an artifact of Win32 called the HWind. And that's a handle to a window in the Windows operating system. And then once you have that handle, you can call a bunch of functions based on it. And so the only way to make WinForms run on, you know, a non-Windows device is to basically emulate many of the Windows APIs on that device. That doesn't make a lot of sense. The other thing is, imagine you took a WinForms app and ran it on a Mac. It's not going to look like a Mac app. It's going to look like a WinForms app. It's going to have Windows-style buttons and Windows-style menus, and it's not going to feel native. And so it sounds great in purpose to say, hey, just make it run everywhere. But the only way to make it run everywhere is to basically emulate Win32 on the Mac, and then you have an app that doesn't look like a Mac app. So, you know, we don't think that technology is the right technology to build cross-platform desktop apps. WPF has got similar roots. So WPF is actually built on top of DirectX, you know, which was an API for doing fast graphics on the Windows platform. Many video games are based on top of DirectX. And so the only way to make a WPF app run on a, let's say, a Mac is you have to port DirectX to the Mac. And then you have the same problem I described earlier. It's going to look like a WPF app, not a Mac app. And so in general, both when you hear that, both of those things sound great. But just Google Windows 95 running on a Mac, you'll see the harsh contrast of the way that things look. And so we're not doing those because we don't think they actually make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it would probably also be very hard to actually do. Painful process to actually make that work on in all the places, in all the platforms.
So Mono, which is an open source version of .NET, it does actually have WinForm support that runs cross-platform. It does that by using Wine. And for people that don't know, Wine is a Windows emulator for Linux.
It does work, yeah. But is it a good idea?
Exactly.
So when we're talking about Mono, that kind of also brings us to Xamarin. As in, Xamarin will then be absorbed by the One.NET when .NET 6 hits, right? We just talked about that. So Xamarin has iOS native, Android native, and Xamarin Forms. Will all those workloads also be available in .NET 6?
Yeah, so, Xamarin today primarily targets iOS and Android. And kind of our goals with .NET 6 is a few things. We want to build it into the actual SDK. So you can .NET new, Xamarin Forms or .NET new iOS, .NET new Android. We're obviously going to support the native platforms, but you could also run Xamarin Forms on a Mac today. It's kind of experimental, and you can run it on Windows today as well. And once again, it's kind of experimental, and we'd love to make those non-experimental. The reason it runs on both of those desktop OSs today is that's how you build your app locally. You don't want to copy the app to your phone while you're actually working on it locally. You want to run it locally on the desktop to get the best inner loop perf on your tools. So we'd like to, put Xamarin directly in the product so it feels like it's a natural part of .NET. As part of that, we'll rename it to .NET MAUI. We'll change the namespaces and stuff like that so it actually really, really is part of the tool chain. And then our hope is that we'll actually let you target the Mac desktop and the Windows desktop as well as part of the effort. Whether we get all that done in .NET 6, I can't promise anything. It's software, you know how software works. But that's the long-term vision and goal is to get there. Another cool thing we're going to do in the Xamarin space is if you ever built a Xamarin app, they're kind of confusing. You file new one of these in Visual Studio, and you end up with a whole bunch of projects. You end up with an iOS project, an Android project, potentially a Windows project. Then you get a class library. We want to smooth all that out so you actually get a single project inside of Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac. And from that, you can right-click and say deploy to iOS, deploy to Android. But we want to simplify the developer experience by making that super clean.
That would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's one piece of tech that's actually shipping today for Xamarin that a lot of folks don't know. And it's a checkbox that I think you have to go into the preview section of Visual Studio to enable it. It's called Hot Reload and Hot Restart. And the cool thing there is, you know, I'm talking to you on a Windows PC. With Hot Reload, Hot Restart, I can actually plug my iPhone into my PC. I don't have any Macintosh on my network, and I can actually run and deploy .NET apps on my iOS device live with nothing else installed on the machine. I've done demos of this, and people are like, I didn't know you could do that. To publish to the actual App Store, you obviously would have to have a Mac because that's the device you have to use to publish. It means as a developer, I can develop on my own device, on my machine, and it doesn't matter if I'm running on Windows or Mac. Other cool parts of that tech on the iOS side of it is if I make a code change in Visual Studio, normally, you know, anytime you make a code change, any developer, whether you're using .NET or you're using like Android Studio, you make a change, you have to copy the whole app back to the phone. Another cool part of this tech is it enables us to only send the diff of the change to the phone, which means I can make a change in the markup for the UI, press save, the phone will almost refresh instantaneously. I can make a change in some of the C# code, press save, the UI will almost change instantaneously. And we think this is a part of the Xamarin tech that's going to be really amazing to make that inner loop super, super fast. And much of this is actually available, as I said, today with the current versions of Visual Studio, and that'll get better in the .NET 6 wave.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. That means I don't need a Mac anymore, or no Mac in cloud, at least, to build it.
You need a Mac just to publish to the store. You don't need to have every developer doesn't need a Mac.
Oh, that's just amazing. Thank you very much. That's amazing. So, all right. Very cool stuff. So .NET 5, what are the new features in there? Because we already have some preview versions and we're getting close to a release candidate, I suppose. What are the new features in there?
In many ways, when I think of .NET 5, I think of it being a enhancement of the .NET Core 3 world that we live in today. So there's tons of improvements all throughout the framework. I showed stuff at Build where I was able to build a microservice in .NET, and using that linker tech, I was able to get down to below 20 megs. There is C# 9. C# 9's got some really cool features. It's got a feature called Records that makes building structures faster and less stuff to type. My favorite feature in C# 9 that I demo all the time is something called top-level programs. And it's all about, as we start thinking of microservices, you think about, well, how much text do I have to write my microservice? And this tech enables you to get rid of the main part of your program. You basically just at the top of the C# file, just start writing code. You don't need any of that ceremony. I can write a microservice in like 10 lines of code. Other things that are kind of cool that are coming in the .NET 5 wave. We have a project called Project Tie, and it's it won't ship with part of .NET 5. It'll probably ship with .NET 6, but it's available to use today. Tie is super cool. And as we start thinking of these microservices, you know, okay, my app's not just a single app anymore. It might have two backend APIs. It's got a front-end Blazor website, and maybe it has a service like a Redis cache. How do you build that in .NET? Today we have semi-good tooling in Visual Studio where you can run multiple projects at the same time. But Tie is all about letting you, when you type .NET run, or in this case, it'll be Tie run, it doesn't run just the one project, it runs the whole graph. And it does a bunch of cool stuff for you. As it runs the whole graph, you get a dashboard that comes up that shows you the URLs for each of the services that you have. You can view the logs for each of the running applications. Let's say microservice A needs to talk to microservice B. Well, the way we do that today is you and I would, Barry, we would just hard code probably the IP address of one to the next. And then as I gave it to you to put on your machine, you'd have to go fix those IP addresses. Yeah. Another feature of Tai is it lets you, it handles all the IP mapping. So you basically, I don't say, give me, you know, don't talk to port, you know, IP address XXXXX colon number. Instead, I just say, talk to front end one. And it'll change front end one to the correct IP address and port dynamically for you, which means I can develop locally great. I can give it to you. It runs great on your machine. And even better, you can take that same application, put it into the cloud. And when it goes in the cloud, all those ports and IPs change again, and it all stays hooked up together. And so we think it's a really exciting piece of .NET that people are going to get to see and use in the
file. That is pretty amazing. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of what's now called local service for Azure Kubernetes service, which was called DevSpaces before, where you could develop locally on your Azure Kubernetes service, and then that technology would then route the Azure Kubernetes services calls to your local machine and would then make it look like that's local host. It kind of sounds similar to that.
Yeah, it's similar. That tech that you're talking about, it's kind of crazy from a different perspective. So with Tai, you have a great local developer experience where you can run the whole slot of your application on your local machine. The tech you're talking about, what used to be called DevSpaces, it lets you take one of your services and run it locally. And you might want to do that because you're debugging. Like imagine the case that you have, let's say, two SQL databases, you've got a Redis cache, and you have like four APIs up in, you know, maybe trying to run all that locally is too much for your machine. And so that tech, the goal of that tech is to say, hey, we're going to put all that tech up in the cloud somewhere, but this one piece of it, I want to run on my machine. And it will make all those other services dynamically change the traffic to come to your machine. You can debug on your machine without trying to recreate that entire infrastructure on your local box, which is super important.
Ah, what great times we live in. That's just amazing, isn't it?
That's what's great about being a developer is the space is always changing, and there's, you know, there's always new tech to try.
So when is .NET 5 going to be released, or at least a release candidate?
.NET 5 will ship in November. So we now ship .NETs every November. So one of the things that's kind of important to us is we want to make it easy for our customers to understand when the next .NET comes. And so we are going on to a regular release cadence. We'll ship every November. And then we also have two types of versions. We have what's called current, and we have something that's called long-term. And so right now, our long-term support version is 3.1. And a long-term version is good for 3 years, which means if you start using .NET Core 3.1 today, you'll be able to use it for 3 years before it goes out of support. And so that gives you that length of saying, if I stay on this version, I don't have to worry about upgrading to the next version all the time. .NET 5, which is going to ship this November, it's a we call it current release. It doesn't have the long support. So basically, when .NET 6 ships, you'll have to move to .NET 6. And so we try to give our customers two avenues. One is the customer wants to stay on the edge of our technology all the time. They can just upgrade every year. And then there's the customers that actually want to go a little bit slower, and they can stay on the LTS releases every for 3 years. And so every other year is an LTS. So 3.1 last year was an LTS. This year will be a non-LTS with 5, and then 6 will be an LTS the year after. And we actually adopted this from other technologies, Ubuntu, Node.js. Other technologies are doing the exact same thing, giving the customer two choices. It's funny. I talked to some of our customers, and they're like, but I don't want to move that fast. And then I'm like, well, how often do you upgrade your Node.js, your Angular or your Vue? Yeah. Well, we update Angular every 4 months.
Yeah.
Well, why can you update that every 4 months, but you can't change the .NET core you're based on top of, except every 3 years? And I'm like, oh yeah. So I think in many cases it's a retraining. You know, .NET framework has spoiled people where you You know, you get 10 years of support on the release of .NET Framework. But people need to realize that's a cost to my team. If I have like 10 versions of .NET all supported at the same time, I have to have X number of engineers per release to maintain them. So,
yeah, yeah, it's a very different world. All right. Well, thank you very much for teaching me about .NET 5 and all the awesome new stuff that's coming our way. As a final question, as we are coming to the end of this podcast, I'd like to ask if, well, people get overwhelmed by changes in technology. And now there's something new on the horizon already. There's .NET 5 and .NET 6 after that. And I can imagine that lots of people are very comfortable in the technology that they're working on currently. And they really don't want to think about that new stuff and learn more new things. But what is your advice for people that find the constant wave of new technology daunting? What is your advice to them? And how can they maybe learn to keep up with all that new stuff?
Yeah, it's tough. We have half of our customers that think we go too fast, and half of our customers that think we go too slow. And so, to me, if you want to, I think the big thing when it comes to technology and the increasing speed of technology, in many cases, is change your build tech. Inside of Microsoft, many of our new stuff is all, we build everything using CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous deployment. But I was going to say, in many cases, I think it comes down to having teams look at modern build practices of doing automated builds using CI/CD, which these are things that let developers see problems in technology faster rather than slower. Traditional development, it used to be that, you know, I'd build it on my machine, and then I would do a merge into the main code, and then we would all work to fix it so it runs again. Idea behind CI/CD is we're actually doing those merges every day versus waiting weeks and months to do them. Using those types of practices lets you find problems faster, keep your code current faster. So we find that many teams, just by implementing modern DevOps, lets them move at a faster rate of speed than if they don't have those practices. And so as a Microsoft employee and somebody building .NET, I see a lot of customers, and most customers are asking us advice on how to move into modern DevOps. And, you know, you could have somebody like Jay Smelzer from our team on a podcast in the future to talk about that.
That's great advice, because once you have automated all your build processes, then moving to something new is not that daunting, because everything is automated. And once something goes wrong, you will see it very early on, and it's very easy to fix relatively.
Yeah. So to me, it's about this, you know, thinking that way, of having the processes in place to let you move faster and find problems faster. When I joined Microsoft, it used to be that we would work for months at a time before we do a merge, and it would take us a year to fix the merge.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time, and we will see you next week for another episode of Developer Weekly. This episode is brought to you by me. If you like this show and you want to support it, please visit my courses on Pluralsight and buy my new book, 200 Things Developers Should Know, which is about programming, career, troubleshooting, dealing with managers, health, and much more. You can find my Pluralsight courses and the book over at developerweeklypodcast.com/about. That is www.developerweeklypodcast.com/about.